to hear your living word and open our eyes that we might see Jesus. Amen. Making a deal with Jesus. We're going to focus only on the first of two stories that are in this gospel reading. Story of the Syrophoenician woman. Here's a woman, a Gentile, from the region of Tyre, not far from Capernaum in the Jewish territory. Jesus crosses the border into the land of the Gentiles, not far away. This woman, called this a Syrophoenician woman, a Greek actually, approaches Jesus and begged him to cast the demon out of her little daughter who was suffering. And Jesus says in verse 27 of this passage, "Let the children first be fed, for it is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." Stop. Did Jesus just call this woman a dog? Were you awake? Did you get that? The usual explanation of this, and it's one of those ones that you trip over when you read it or you hear a sermon on it. Commentators trip over it, I'm afraid. And I think years ago I did the same thing. And it's this usual conventional understanding of what Jesus meant when he said, "You don't throw the children's food to the dogs." Usually referring to the traditional Jewish reference to Gentiles. But still, it was callous, it was crude, it was heartless, and it was insulting for someone of Jesus' position and stature at least. We would consider that for you and me, some who are cruder and are sometimes insulting. We would not even want to be doing that. But get out your Sherlock Holmes magnifying glass and take another look at this. I had to struggle through this because I just didn't feel that was the right one, and there are commentators who actually make the point. An alternate view of this, you got to understand, we're in the region of Tyre, about 35 kilometers northwest of Capernaum, and Capernaum was the large Jewish city in the north. Jerusalem was in the south, but the commercial center was in the north, and Jesus' northern ministry was in the area of Capernaum. His southern ministry was in Jerusalem. But this is just across the border, not very far away. And it was the region of the Gentiles called region of Tyre. It was kind of a provincial area. And the purpose of Jesus going there was to rest for himself and for his disciples. Get away from the work and ministry that he had been involved. He needed a break. So there's no preaching, no teaching, no healing and deliverance ministry going on during this time. Enter the Syrophoenician woman. She finds that he's there. And she approaches him very aggressively and begs him and says, she has a daughter who's possessed with an unclean spirit. Now, she's never heard Jesus preach. She's never heard his teaching. She has never seen him in the middle of his healing ministry and casting out demons. She has probably gone to many shrines because the Hellenistic gods were known to be healers themselves. So she is a mother, and she goes to these shrines. Says, the passage says that Jesus could not be hid. See, BBC, CNN, and CBC have already been there and done major profiles on this rabbi from Palestine who's getting a big reputation as a healer, right up there with Benny Hinn. And so his reputation has seeped across the border into the Gentile territory. So she's going only on reputation because, see, the passage is clear that Jesus didn't go there to do teaching, preaching, or healing. He was there to take a break with his disciples. He was on a retreat. He hid in a house, he thought. But she came and she fell down at his feet and she begged him to cast the demon out of her little daughter. So here's the encounter. First, she begs him. And Jesus said, let the children first be fed, for it is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. And the woman says, yes, Lord, but even the dogs under the table eat the children's bread, crumbs. And Jesus says, for this saying, you may go your way, the demon has left your daughter. So let's make a couple of observations here. One is, there is no hint that this woman ever received Jesus' statement to her as an insult. None whatsoever. I mean, if that was an insult, I could see her saying, man, who do you think you are? You're supposed to be this great healer. You talk about God, you teach about God, and you come and insult me? You know, if this is the way you're going to treat me, I'll go back to the other gods. I mean, wouldn't you feel insulted? See, Jesus was not echoing the old Jewish practice of calling Gentiles dogs. That did happen. But Jesus is not doing that. Don't believe. Furthermore, when the Jews said that, they were not usually just simply saying the Gentiles, oh, see that dog walking down the street. Rather, they were referring to their practices. You see, Jews, it's unclean to eat pork and all those other restrictions, purity laws around food. Well, the Gentiles, they would eat bacon like it's good at McDonald's, you know. And no problem at all. So they considered that to be unclean, and dogs were perceived to be unclean, obviously. And so that's where the reference is coming, even in the traditional way of Jews referring to dogs. Still not nice. But rather, it's interesting that the woman refers to the dogs in the house picking up the crumbs from under the table. There was a difference between the yard dogs who never got in the house. They were bad, but these were domesticated. Just like back on the farm, we would have a pet. Usually the dogs didn't come in, but we'd have a pet cat that would be in the house. But the other cats didn't get in the house. They were just too messy, and the dogs stayed outside. But you could do a pet, even a dog or a cat that was domesticated enough to actually stay in the house. So she's referring to household pets. She's referring to a puppy here, not the yard dogs. So Jesus' reference to children eating, if you notice, he says, the children eat first. He is actually not telling her that she shouldn't have her child healed, or God would never do it. Just as now is not the time. So the issue was not whether or not he would do it. The question was whether he'd do it now. He said, the children eat first. It may be a reference to the whole biblical story that he may have been referring to, where in the Old Testament it was clear in the covenant that God says, I'm going to bless you, and through you the world will be blessed. And in Ezekiel's vision of the water coming out from under the temple in Jerusalem, that it would get larger and wider and wider and deeper, and it would finally go out and encompass the whole world for the healing of the nations, including the Gentiles. Paul said that this word, this covenant of salvation, came first to the Jews and then to the Gentiles. So he may be alluding to that, although that would have been totally lost on her. But at least it was more of what we might call an enigmatic statement. You know, it's kind of like those situations where he knows that she's desperate. He's wanting to see whether or not she really is serious, or she is just kind of doing the rounds. And so, you know, children eat first, and then the dogs, the puppies, get a chance to eat the crumbs afterwards. Slightly with a twinkle, kind of like my mother told me about my father. I was only 7 when he died, but she said he'd sometimes say something that was kind of like a joke, but he never crack a smile, and she could never tell whether he was serious or not serious. So she said I had to look at him carefully to see whether or not he was actually making a joke or whether he was actually serious. So if you could hear the tone of voice, if you could look at almost the twinkle in Jesus' eye when he says this, you begin to see that he's playing with her. He's not insulting her, but he's going to see if she's going to take the bait and come back. She's going to come back at him or not. And the woman does not disappoint. There's no hint that she's been insulted. She responds. But you know, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. You see, she said, it's got to be now. She cleverly turns Jesus' response to her advantage. She does not reject Jesus' comparison, but she takes it a step further. She takes it on. Said the crumbs under the table belong to the puppies, not sometime in the future, but they belong there. You know, children, they don't put all their crumbs on the side of their plate and then put it on the floor after they finish eating. Have you ever noticed that? The crumbs keep falling right from the beginning to the end of the meal. So the dog should be there to eat the crumbs just as they fall. No need to wait. She's telling Jesus, no, she says, let the children be fed, but allow those puppies to enjoy the crumbs. No need for these puppies to wait. And so Jesus sees in this her unwavering commitment and her trust in him. A real sense of faith that he can heal her daughter. And a humility. She does not come at him, argue with him in that sense. But there's a humility to come before him. She begs him. She doesn't try to stand on her dignity in that sense. And he is delighted and he grants her request. What happened here? In the context, I wouldn't have picked this up, I don't think, if I hadn't experienced it and done it a few times. This is not an insulting encounter with a woman, a Gentile woman. This, and her response to him, this is good Mideastern bargaining. This is making a deal with God and with Jesus on this. And she knew and they knew just exactly how to do it. If you've ever experienced bargain, you never pay the price that they tell you in the shop. Never. And I've been with people who said, no, no, no. You want that? No, don't you do it. I'll take care of that. And they step in and they start doing the bargaining. And I have a Korean friend who told me, she said, this is why the Chinese are such good business people. They will never let a deal go. And she said, I would walk into a shop, we said something $75, and she said, I keep working away at it, and then three or four times I threatened to walk out the door, and just as I walk, get just about turned away to walk out the door, the price goes down. And she said, I walk away, I paid $15 for it. And she said, that's why the Chinese are better business people than the Koreans. So this is anecdotal, this is not policy, so I'm just passing on. What this is like. You see, there's no offense. When you're dealing with bargaining like that, there is not insults going on. There is bargaining. When a deal is reached and each one shakes hands, the seller gets the price that they wanted, and the buyer gets the product for the price that they wanted. And when you say, well, what's it worth? What it is worth and the right price for the product is always the one that you shake hands on. And Jesus and that woman, Syrophoenician woman, had a deal. This is how we understand the story. Spiritually, you see, the real heart of this story is this is about a desperate woman seeking help from God for her little daughter. This is a woman. At least some women here, not men, but some women here have been mothers and are mothers. And you know what it's like, how you would go to bat for your child, your little child. You would do anything. You would go to any lengths in order to get help for that child. You know what that's like. She was desperate. And she didn't hide her desperateness. She interrupted Jesus twice. She interrupted him first. When she walked in the house and he was trying to hide and rest. She interrupted him a second time when she interrupted his line of reasoning. When he said, no, give the food to the children first. And she said, no, no, no. Let the dogs have, and the puppies have the food, their crumbs now. What does this mean for you and me? We've all had our moments of desperation, probably. Had mine. But most of us are more private about it usually. We don't, on the middle of the street, publicly, on the on our knees, grabbing the ankles of somebody, begging them for help. This is okay, except sometimes our motive is that we don't want to let on that we're desperate. We don't even want to let on to God that we're desperate. In fact, how many times, if you ever stop and think about it, you've prayed when in a moment of desperation, you prayed to God, God, help me with this. And you think, if I will only be better to that person or that situation that's coming, if I get a good track record this past week, I think God will listen to me just a bit more than he did this from what the way I added my attitude and what I did this past week. Understand what I'm saying? Worse, we could be like the Pharisees. They were so caught up in their rules and regulations, they couldn't even see a human need in front of them. And this happened to Jesus so many times. You know, on the Sabbath, you're not supposed to feed, you're not supposed to drag a donkey out of the ditch and things like that. It couldn't heal on the Sabbath. And Jesus said, you know, your rules and your regulations are blinding you from the human need and the compassion that you need, because that's God's heart for them. And the Sabbath is getting in the way for you. But Jesus never intended the Sabbath to mitigate the need for responding to human suffering. Or they could be like the disciples, who are rather dull a lot of the time, and sometimes they were hard-hearted. Get the children out of here. You're interrupting. The children are interrupting Jesus. Let him teach. Jesus said, let the children come to me. They were often caught up in themselves. You see, desperation at its heart, however it is expressed, and wherever and whenever, is a sign of humility, get this, that knows we can offer absolutely nothing. We are empty-handed. You see, sometimes we think, if I can only bring this to God, you know, the deal with this woman was not at all around, I can offer you this if you will heal my daughter. It was none of that. It was, I am desperate, I'm begging you. And her only weapon was her logic that she came back to Jesus and said, the crumbs are already under the table. You don't. The dogs don't have to wait. They come in humility, offering nothing, and simple trust that this God can respond and answer. See, she reminds us that a humble and a persistent outsider will receive more from God than a disinterested and a self-sufficient and self-satisfied insider who thinks they can contribute 50% to the deal. But you see, this is what exactly delights God. Delights God to display what God does best, that is to extend and shower upon the ones who he loves, sheer grace and mercy. And sheer grace and mercy means there's no other thing that's coming back. Sheer grace and mercy to the desperate, those who can sing with full open-hearted, nothing in my hand and I bring, simply to thy cross I cling. That is the evangel. That is the gospel. We don't often see this sense of desperation much in our life, in our public life, or in our well-ordered liturgy. When we do see it, it's usually on television when we see what we consider to be a huckster, televangelist, and people coming forward desperate for healing and thinking they're going, maybe going away without it. And we kind of look down and see there was poor, simple folk doing that. But that's about as far as we can see. But sometimes you see it. Now, I was thinking about this. I'm not telling you off to go off to a Catholic church, join another church particularly. But I'll tell you where I've seen it in much quieter ways. You know, Catholic churches are open 24/7. And I've been in urban areas where the church has been open. I've gone in sometimes during the daytime. I've gone in the evening or late evening, sometimes at night. And what do I see? I see somebody walking and sitting over here. Somebody quietly sitting over here. Total silence in the place. See somebody going up and lighting a votive candle in this little area, kneeling at the altar sometimes, quietly, silently praying. You got to know that some of those people in the wee hours of the morning and the silence of the night are feeling moments of desperation in their lives. They're coming to that place, kind of like Nicodemus coming at night to talk to Jesus. So they come in their silence and their quietness, but the internal fire of desperation within them. So for you and me, just remember, it matters not whether it's day or night, whether it's a public liturgy or in the privacy of your own home or your bedroom. One pastor writer said, you may not be too desperate right now, but file this away. Life being what it is, someday you will be in the shoes of the Syrophoenician woman. Then remember her story. Amen.